Some activists in Ferguson, Missouri, are criticizing the decision to have undercover cops at last night's march marking the one-year anniversary of the shooting death of Michael Brown. Police say when a young man shot at the plainclothes cops, they returned fire and he is now in critical condition. Other activists are saying the violence shouldn't take away from the fact that the death of Michael Brown launched a national conversation about race. So, a question for you. If you are white and liberal and maybe listening to that conversation, do you find yourself thinking, I don't racially profile, my ancestors didn't have slaves, I'm one of the good guys, this has nothing to do with me? Well, Debbie Irving would ask you to rethink that. She lived in a privileged white Anglo-Saxon Protestant world most of her young life, considered herself a good person, but then realized the invisible system, post-slavery, post-Jim Crow even, that she was a part of. Her book is called Waking Up White and Finding Myself in the Story of Race. She's now a racial justice educator and writer. As her husband says, it couldn't have happened to a whiter person. And Debbie joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
What a provocative read. There are also a series of light bulb moments, starting when you were five and you loved Indians and asked your mother, where are the Indians?
So that was just sheer childhood curiosity. Wait a minute. I've been playing with all these little figurines and looking at this mural in our library. And, well, where are they now? And she said they had drank themselves to death. She was not a cruel person. She was kind. She was educated. And that was a story that she had been told, and she passed it right along to me.
We know that there was a systematic herding of Indians onto reservations, and we come to where we are today. But you go to an all-white school. You eventually moved to the culturally diverse Cambridge, where you worked in the arts. Your early jobs were to bring the arts to inner-city schools, and you were going to do this in the best way possible to help the disadvantaged. But what?
But I was coming from a position of thinking that I was helping people who were inferior. And I thought that being racist meant being bigoted and not caring about these people who seemed to be unable to help themselves in these dilapidated neighborhoods with falling apart schools. And so I went into help mode without understanding the history and the huge housing and lending systems that had actually created a highly segregated housing footprint.
Tell us more about that, because you eventually go to Wheelock College to get your master's in special education and you take a course. You discovered that while the GI Bill helped your family, enabled returning veterans to buy cheap homes and to get college educations, that many blacks were shut out of that.
Right. There's this fabulous film, Race, the Power of an Illusion, that was created years ago. I really wish that if every American watched it, they could get a tax break. I think it's that important because it just lays out the history so well. They started talking about the GI Bill, and I got all excited because I had grown up hearing about the GI Bill, proof that America took care of its own. $120 billion of United States government money went into housing through that GI Bill, and 98% of that went to white families.
People are shown driving to Levittown, where I lived on Long Island, and these blacks were turned away. And now you go deeper, you're digging deeper, and you're finding out about redlining, real estate agents that outline neighborhoods where maybe a black family had moved in, and this led to blockbusting, real estate agents who went and then knocked on doors and told nervous whites, you better get out, because blacks are coming, and then turn around and sold the homes to blacks at a higher interest rate.
Right.
You're finding out all of this in this course. Mm-hmm. You're in your 40s. You really didn't know?
I did not know. Mm-hmm. I so had bought into the idea that the playing field was level. So it was very easy for me to make judgments about people who appeared not to be thriving. They hadn't worked hard, or they didn't care, or they weren't as smart. Indicting individuals, as opposed to looking around the environment and thinking, what happened here? Housing equity, better access to better education. And so there's all of these compounding advantages. Meanwhile, there are compounding disadvantages. Discrimination and then privilege is the word that a lot of people assign to the opposite. So yes, I would say I had white privilege.
That GI Bill and housing system that you were learning about set the stage for equity to be built and then passed on for generations. Equity that blacks did not have. You're learning this, but then you're also interacting with blacks. You were one of the officials in charge of First Night in Boston, which is the New Year's Eve celebration. Someone says, you know, there's not as many people of color in the neighborhoods involved in this. And so they are invited in and they've come to first night and you have a postmortem afterwards to see how some of these families felt. And you're very honest about this, thinking they will say, thank you so much for including us in the first night celebration. And instead,
there was silence. And then finally, one young boy, I bet he was no older than 12, said, man, it was freaky. I've never seen so many white people in my life. I was scared.
Yeah.
And that absolutely stunned me. From his lens, it was frighteningly white. And so when I got this understanding in this course, all of a sudden, all these pieces, it was like a dam was broken.
What was the understanding?
I was having my belief system challenged. There was something in me and in the way I was socialized that prevented me from leaning into that discomfort and saying, can you tell me more?
Yeah. Wait a minute. You were white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. You're not allowed to feel uncomfortable.
I'm not allowed to feel uncomfortable, right. So I can barely acknowledge that feeling. And if I do, I certainly can't talk about it. But that's what I wish I could have done. It would have been to say, wow, can you tell me more?
That's Debbie Irving. Her book is Waking Up White. And by the way, she tells of another moment when she's the only white in a room filled with blacks, and she realized how that young black boy feels probably all the time. But Debbie, there are a lot of white Americans, I think, now having light bulbs go off. Gee, I don't think I'd ever be pulled over if I didn't signal changing lanes.
Right.
You interacted with African Americans, and you realized you never come home from work and say, wow, what a great day. I didn't get pulled over by a cop. But they do almost every day.
Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that when people first started describing it to me, I questioned it. Getting followed in a grocery store,
yeah.
Getting stopped by the police for a broken taillight. And I would say, well, you must have been driving fast. You must have caused it. It was so inconceivable to me.
Yeah. But how are you different because you seem to have had scales lifted from your eyes?
Mm-hmm. I see what I am spared day in and day out. How easy it is for me to just wake up and go about in a world that was constructed for me.
A couple things. There are whites listening, and you're well aware of this, who might say, wait a second, I don't think this is a race divide you've become aware of. It's a class divide. There will be others, I'm sure, who might say, I had nothing to do with that redlining and blockbusting in the 60s. That was way before my time. I am a good person.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say?
Well, I would say if we had two people come to America a month ago, one presented as a white-skinned person, the other presented as a black-skinned person, that black person is going to experience, most likely, all the kinds of discriminations, terrifying, sometimes life-threatening discriminations that we're seeing. And the white person is going to be spared racially. That doesn't mean the white person might not have a hard time. There are plenty of white people in America who are struggling financially horribly now. There is class privilege and class discrimination, but you can be poor, white. And if you can get out of that cycle, that vicious cycle, you can blend. You can one day in a generation or two, hopefully, you can pass. Meanwhile, you're not being followed around stores. Whatever's happening to you that's hard, it isn't because of your skin color.
What about the notion that, you know, whites might feel, I feel for this, and there's nothing I can do?
There is no neutral in racism. If you are not actively trying to deconstruct and reconstruct the narrative and the systems in this country, you are not only participating and benefiting in it, but you're adding fuel to it. So what can you do? You can learn your history. You can change the way you talk to your children about it. Gather with white. I mean, Malcolm X was the one who said, white people, go do your work.
And just the one-on-one conversations. I was thinking at a workplace situation once. It was I was a white person on a largely African-American staff television show, and everybody wanted to do a fur fashion show. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm sort of uncomfortable with that. So there was this tension for a while. And then one young black woman said to me, you mean to tell me that after centuries where my family could not afford a fur coat, when we finally can, you've decided they're not fashionable? You know, and it never, ever would have occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
Give an example of an exchange you had with an African-American where you realized, oh, my gosh, I never would have thought of that.
So there's one actually, I mean, I still have them all the time, but I do remember walking with a colleague and we had been to a fundraising meeting together and she was the only black woman in a room of all white women who were either on boards or seeking funding. It was a very upper class Boston female lunch scene. And she said, "Oh, my God, that was so uncomfortable." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "You know, I was sitting at this table with all white women. I could just tell they were trying to size me up. Like, who is she? How'd she get here? Where'd she go to school? Why does she speak so well?" And she said, "I just hate moments like these." And what I said was, "Forget them. They didn't mean it that way." And what that really, the impact of that is that I completely dismissed something that was really bothering her. Mm. And what I wish I had said is, because actually she was there at my invitation, I wish I had said, "I am so sorry I put you in that position."
There's so much in here. The book, again, Waking Up White, Debbie Irving writes about her journey to really find out about it, what it means to be in the white race. Deb, thanks so much for coming in to talk to us about it.
Thanks for having me on.